Ready to go forward.
On House Bill 2112. And
the conference can begin.
The
conference can begin.
Yeah. So with that, Janet, would you just briefly tell us about House Bill 2112 and colleagues, we're looking at the B11 amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2112B, as it passed the Senate, prohibited the use of barrier-type exterior insulation and finish systems on residential structures that contain four or fewer units, so it wouldn't have applied to apartment buildings or commercial or other types of buildings. And it exempted necessary repairs or replacements of such materials on existing residences. The B11 amendments add some additional specificity to the definition of the products that are prohibited, and it applies the prohibition to commercial as well as residential buildings, so all types of buildings. Exempts the application of the barrier type product on concrete and concrete block, and exempts architectural applications that are decorative or otherwise not intended to protect the interior space of the building. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'd like to have Mark Long from Building Codes Division and Larry White, who traveled down from Portland, to just briefly go over barrier type system and answer some questions, perhaps, if we have any.
Can I bring this up and make that review?
You bet.
Is that okay?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes, and have been working with Senator Winters and other members of the legislature to address this issue. We've reviewed the B11, 2112 B11 amendments. As the committee staff indicated, they provide a prohibition for commercial and residential, and we've worked very hard to make sure that it's very clear that this is the barrier type of each system. There are two types, what we call a drainage type and a barrier type. And we've attempted to use language similar to what other states have used to prohibit the barrier type, make sure that the drainage type is still allowed. And we've also put this under the licensing statute, if I remember the original bill, under 701, so that there was an enforcement mechanism should there be a problem with the installation of this. One of the key things that I think the committee should know is that although we've been looking at this issue in the residential area for some time, and in 05, the building code itself specifically set standards for the drainage type, the prohibition on the barrier type isn't abundantly clear, and the enforcement mechanism, in my opinion, doesn't occur because there isn't an inspection of the siding itself. And so by putting the bill the way we did, it provides an enforcement mechanism against the contractor's license if they were to install the wrong type that we're prohibiting. With that, I know, Larry, you can talk about the differences between barrier and drainage, and I think you have a display here as well to help the committee. And I'll be happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Long. And if Mr. White, if you can introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair Hovey and members of the committee. My name is Larry White. I'm the division manager for Western Partitions. We're a large plastering company in Oregon and across the West Coast. I brought in this sample piece to kind of help you guys visualize the differences in the system. This particular system happens to be a rain screen system. This is what we use today. It is not a barrier system, and if I could approach, I want to do a little demonstration and explain the components. So the primary difference in a rain screen is this blue membrane, which is applied, and each different manufacturer has a different version of this. This particular one is Dryvit. It's called Backstop. Everybody's heard Dryvit. It's almost like a generic term. Your substrate could be steel studs or wood.
Your sheathing could be a gypsum sheathing like this. This is called dense glass or a plywood OSB. The primary difference in the barrier systems and the reason they were called barriers is because this outside shell was the barrier of the building. It's what kept the water out. This blue didn't exist in a barrier system. You'd have your sheathing. It'd be stuck directly to the sheathing, whether it be wood or gypsum. And then this outer layer, which has water-resistant qualities, would be your only protection from water intruding the building. And once it got past this barrier, there was nothing to stop it from getting into the shell. So that's partly where the barrier system comes in. It was an outside barrier to the water. In all other building components that we use, they use either a paper or a Tyvek, some type of cladding over the top of the sheathing before they put the exterior barrier on. So if you had paper here and then you had wood siding, say cedar siding, the cedar has water-resistant qualities, and by shingle fashion and installation, that becomes a secondary barrier. So you have a primary barrier behind it, secondary barrier on top. So this system has a primary barrier behind it and a secondary barrier on top, the rain screen system. The old barrier eave system that we're talking about eliminating had no primary barrier, just the second one. So a lot of the people in our industry think that you need a 3/4 inch drainage cavity for a drain system to work. I've seen them as much as 4 inches. As you can probably see, this looks like not much of a drainage here. This is actually adhered like tile. It has little tiny grooves of mud, and they're run vertically. And I'm just going to pour a little bit of water. You'll kind of see how effective this is. It just doesn't take much. You can see it just comes out immediately. And so any water that would breach the first barrier would drain out, and the gypsum behind it is completely protected. Any questions?
Thank you. That was pretty visual, and I guess we can figure out how that works.
Yeah.
Or we figure out that it does work.
It does work. It works very well, actually.
So I also wanted to bring up, Sean, not bring up, but Sean Miller had raised the issue about concrete walls and CMU blocks, and we're putting an exemption in to the bill so that the barrier type can still be applied to concrete and CMU block walls. And I just wanted to put that on the record, and maybe somebody can speak to, and Larry, probably you, speak to why we should still allow that the barrier system on block and concrete.
Well, in the building code and in the IBC, concrete and CMU walls are actually exempt from having another barrier system, another waterproof membrane over the top, because they are, in fact, as part of the building envelope. It's different when you're underground under the dirt, but as part of the upper building envelope, they act as a water-resistant barrier. Throughout history, they actually used to build water towers out of concrete, and they have a self-healing quality, so once they're filled with water, they almost look like they're going to crack, but they don't leak. And so concrete, by code, doesn't require anything else. So it is the primary barrier, so any eaves on top of that would be a secondary barrier, so thus you'd have both systems in place, and it would still act as a drainage.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller representing the Associated Builders and Contractors, who my contractors do commercial work, and some on the CFIS, and I think God said very well, it's that secondary, making sure that that's an effective barrier. And I know, understand the B11s, which add commercial on the barrier type, versus the drainage type, that would still be allowed on commercial projects. The line 22, as the chair indicated, still allows for concrete walls and masonry unit block walls. The other portion of the amendment is architectural features, things that don't hold up. And so if certain buildings have decorative things outside the building, you would still be able to use this product.
Mm-hmm.
So the B11s, I think, are something that we can support. But also, in conversations, if contractors are bidding on a project and you can, without the ban on the barrier type exterior on commercial, you could probably at a lower price have a lower bid and outbid somebody who might be putting the appropriate product on that particular building. So from a contractor standpoint, if you ban the barrier type and it'll still allow the drainage type, contractors are on a level playing field, and of course they're doing the appropriate thing, which is, was indicated that there's a proper drainage on that product. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I guess I'll open it up. Does anybody from the committee have any questions? Representative Shoffley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill's taken an interesting route. But my question, what's brought us here is all these folks getting sick and the mold in their houses or in the workplace. Do you all feel confident that what we're doing here, what we're banning and what we're allowing, is going to radically reduce the amount of mold and sickness from that mold in our residents and our working places in Oregon? Do you believe that, yes or no? Or if you want to describe it, that's great too.
Well, actually, I'll talk about that a little bit. I think the main issue with mold is that so many buildings are being built without proper waterproofing, regardless of what the siding is. I mean, I've seen metal panel systems fail. I've seen wood siding panels fail. In fact, the news in Portland has been about this apartment building that has wood siding on it. And they've got a big mold issue and problems with tenants. So the main issue, and I think that's addressed in another bill, is having the building envelope right, regardless of the product that's on it. And I believe that this product and the way it's done with the proper building envelope is the way to solve it for this product. But I think to address the whole issue substantially is to address the building envelope and that's done right regardless of what the product is on.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Senator Winters, question?
Just a quick question, since I'm the one who started this health issue. And because of my granddaughter, Whitney, in fact, I call this Whitney's bill. But the question is that even though, in correcting this, because I understand that insurance companies also do not have disallowed and do not cover this particular product, and so that does that pose some serious problems for contractors and subs?
Senator,
in some cases, rephrase it, in residential, that there is an exclusion in most of those contracts by insurance companies.
Chair Holvey, Senator Winters, actually, with the insurance industry, there are policies available that would allow EIFs. They would be considered second-line policies. Most of the big carriers like Zurich and St. Paul are not insuring EIFs, or they have an exclusion for EIFs. And when they are insuring it, they're recommending the drainage system out there. But reality is that the insurance companies were hurt by EIFs and really don't even understand it at this point. And so insurance is out there, but probably one of the things this solves is the fact that this will allow the insurance companies to look at this and say, okay, barrier systems where we had the problem, now we've got where we know that what's going on out there is the rain screen systems, and I think the insurance companies are moving towards loosening up into those applications that are done properly. And so they're really, I think, starting to come around. And the concern that it's going to stop is that a lot of these people that are still applying these systems, who are really not well regulated and say they have insurance, probably don't have legitimate insurance. So by banning it and getting the insurance companies to come around to the drainage systems and the quality contractors, you're really moving towards solving a whole other problem.
Follow up.
Follow up, please.
So in your opinion, this could be a good consumer?
I believe so. I believe that, in fact, I built this very mock-up to show to Zurich's people, and they were very impressed by it. And so I believe they're leaning towards that, and the applications. And I've been working on trying to get an industry definition, besides what we've got here, to help the insurance companies move towards understanding what we are and are not doing out there. But one of the problems is I still see a lot of barrier systems going on, and I see systems going on that are good, but there's a lot of different contractors, and I only speak for the ones I deal with and ourselves. So,
further questions? Not really seeing any. I appreciate your comments on the other bill that we have out there that addresses building envelope specialists, which is House Bill 2656, which is in a Ways and Means Committee, and we're hoping that one comes out because it addresses the training issue. Having somebody on the job that knows what they're doing when they install these products, really important piece.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. On that right there, historically, we can always talk about the application of any siding, any roofing, and flashing. If you don't flash or side a roof, house, or building wrong, you're going to get water get in there. But historically, this mold issue mushroomed and ballooned because of these kinds of products. So now all of a sudden people don't roof, side, or flash, and it just happens to coincide with the advent of this product. I'm kind of frustrated there. I agree we do need to train and make sure people are properly installing the envelope. But for how many hundreds of years did we not have this incredible number, volume of mold problem before we had these products? So I think there is a direct correlation between the product and the mold problem. And if this is going to avoid that and still allow this product to be used, that's fine. But to just automatically write it off and say it's because this product are not being applied right, I don't think that's true. I think the product itself is defective in a rainy, wet area, period. And the idea of making sure there's people on a job site that roof, flash, and side the building properly is a good issue, but I think it isn't directly overlapping with us banning certain applications of these products, because these products have radically increased the number of mold problems and water intrusion into our buildings, period, bringing about all the problems that families have felt. So I just want to kind of separate the two. Even though they overlap, it's not a direct overlapping, my humble opinion.
Thanks for your humble opinion, Representative Schaffler. Any other comments or questions from the committee?
You ready for a motion?
Seeing no questions, I didn't know if there was anybody else in the audience that wanted to offer any opinions.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ken Hobbs.
Come ahead.
I talked to you this morning about coming down.
Introduce yourself for the record, please.
My name is Kenneth Hobbs. I'm an attorney licensed in Oregon and practicing in Seattle. I've, for the past 10 years, represented Drive-It Systems and Stowe Industries, the two leading national manufacturers of this product. Between the two of them, they have about 70% of the market share. And in the past 10 years, I've handled about 50 lawsuits involving this product, including the one involving Senator Winter's granddaughter, who was genuinely ill and possibly ill due to mold exposure in her house. However, I'd like to give the committee some context. In the 50 cases I've handled, during that same period of time, my brethren in the construction defect bar, because we all kind of move in a pack, have probably handled 5 to 10 times as the number of cases that I have, because they're all also representing their subcontractor, their general contractor, their window manufacturer, whoever it is, in all of the brick siding houses that fail, in all of the stucco siding houses that fail, in all of the vinyl siding houses that fail, and they're busy. I'm down to 2 claims that I'm handling right now. This is a dead issue with Barrier Eaves. Barrier Eaves had problems in the 90s due to some energy code issues, due to some building boom issues that decreased the quality of the labor force, particularly in this market. But those issues are solved by the building code prohibition on barrier eaves in residential construction. And I think it would be a tragedy to extend that prohibition to the commercial market, where in my 10 years of representing these companies, I've had 5 claims. 4 of those 5 have been a national hotel chain, Extended Stay America, who sued all of their general contractors and all of their EIFS manufacturers throughout the country. So it's not climate driven. So you narrow that down, I've had 1 commercial case involving this product. My client reports that 90% of their sales are on the commercial side, 10% on the residential side. 90% plus of their claims are on the residential side, not on the commercial side. Therefore, it's an infinitesimal problem. And I know you'll be able to point to a building, a condo or an office park or whatever, that's tented up, that had EIFS on it, and it's been stripped off, and it's got black-looking dry rot, which is often confused with mold. Not every dry rot case is a mold case. But I can drive you around any town in Oregon and point to a brick building or a vinyl building or another type of siding building that's got the same problems. And I submit has them with the same magnitude. The solution to this problem is House Bill 2656 and improving the building envelope. This legislature in the last biennium empowered the CBC as a task force to investigate the construction defect claims crisis. And that task force came back with a host of recommendations, including 6 specific building code amendments, none of which are this bill, none of which even address the EIFS product specifically. One of them addresses the flashing issue. Another one addresses inside air quality with bathroom fans. Another one addresses inside air quality with recirculating kitchen fans. The problem, as Representative Schaffler says, this mushrooming of mold problems is due to the tightness with which we now build buildings. It's due to the energy code requiring that buildings be so airtight that there's not only moisture trapped in them, there's air trapped in them. And that's what causes the mold. The building code already, there's a completely separate building code for residential construction than there is for all other types of construction. And there's no empirical evidence that anybody is currently cheating the building code and building residential buildings with this barrier product, either to undercut the market. If they're doing it, they're doing without insurance. All of the lawsuits that I handle, everybody's insured. Everybody has the insurance that they need. The insurance is still available for the product. The economy of Oregon deserves this product as a choice in its commercial construction.
Thank you. Well, just from my perspective, it looks like we still have the product, just installed in a more correct fashion, I would gather. Any other questions? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what this does, though, and actually, in my view, I think you make the case for the bill, is that the product itself has been established, as Representative Schaffer, when we talk about product, as having some inherent flaws. The fact that building codes has put this in their rules has established that. The fact that we have heard that insurers are either excluding or not writing creates an issue and some uncertainty for those who are using new scientific knowledge to create these types of building envelopes, but maybe not get the same best insurance because we haven't differentiated. But most importantly, what this bill does, just because they have a rulemaking, does not allow DCBS the statutory authority to enforce and to issue penalties for those who violate it. And so by putting this in statute, it gives DCBS that authority to actually enforce the rule. And I think those are all positive things. I agree with you, sir, though, 2656, you know, is part of that also. I mean, it affects other things. As we know it in a lot of things, just because there's 5 or 6 things you need to address and you're only addressing one at the moment doesn't mean you don't address that. You address those and you try to get the rest of them handled, and we'll try and do that. Thank you.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hobbs, I guess the question for me is you brought up an issue a few minutes ago that in your client's situation, they put 90% of their product on commercial and they only have about 10% of their claims on commercial. Can you explain to me what the difference, why that would be flipped? What's the situation there that causes the commercial to have so many fewer claims on wood-framed type structures?
The quality of the design of the building going in, the amount of architectural detail that goes into it, the amount of oversight during the project, both by architects, engineers, the building department itself inspects commercial buildings more frequently and more thoroughly. Different types of products require third-party inspections, or the architect, in specifying the product, will call for third-party inspections at critical junctures of construction, so the building is built correctly in the first place. When this product is used without the drainage features, the difference between it and wood or another product is this product is approved by every building code as an outside barrier. Just like CMU behind it, it doesn't need a secondary barrier itself. Where the problems occur is where you've hit an edge of this product and you're up against a window, you're up against something else. Those transition problems, the details and the flashings that are needed at those transitions simply are not problems in commercial construction.
Quick follow-up, if I could.
Follow-up, please.
I just want to make sure I understand. Are you seeing this? Is there a pattern in different states that use the products your clients put forward? Is there a pattern difference? Like, you see a uniform claim system versus? I mean, do you have the same types of claims in Oregon as you do Washington, or do you have the same types of claims you do in Wyoming or wherever?
If Washington and Oregon obviously have similar climates, we have 10 times the number of claims in Oregon as we do in Washington. I attribute that to the building trade in Washington being primarily union-based. They have apprenticeship programs in their plastering programs, whereas in at least the greater Portland area, a lot of it is Eastern European people who have come into the area recently and are not just not as trained, their workforce isn't as trained, they're cutting corners along the way. Similar problems in different climates. The state of North Carolina has very bad problems with its labor force. State of Virginia, right next to it with a very similar climate, has one-tenth of the problems that the state of North Carolina goes. And you can go climate region to climate region and find those similarities and differences.
Senator Winters.
Just a quick question, because you mentioned 90% residential and 10% commercial.
Other way. Oh, in the claims.
In the claims. It's kind of interesting, because I don't think the issue of health would distinguish between whether one is residential or commercial. And if there is a health issue, or if there is a problem, 10% in commercial still raises the issue of how you mitigate or you reduce those kinds of incidents. And the other piece of it is, in commercial, you're dealing with probably one big building, where in residential you're dealing with multiple buildings. But the issue that we're getting at with mold is the issue, and you said you were on the case with my family, and I don't think that there's anyone who would like to have to go through a granddaughter with a tumor, and not once but twice. And so, you know, trying to correct the health issue that this problem that occurs with this particular product is one that I personally am concerned, whether it occurs in a commercial building or whether it occurs in a residential. And looking at the issue of the bill actually separates the old product from the new, so that we're not talking about the new product. But we are talking about the problem that occurred with the old systems. And so would you guarantee to me that if it is a commercial building with the old product, that you could say that there would not be any mold problem and that there wouldn't be any health issues of anybody that are in those buildings?
I could guarantee you that it would be no higher a risk than a wood building, a vinyl building, or a brick building. I can guarantee that.
There you have it. Any other questions? Representative Shoffler.
Yeah, quickly. You said, you said you had five cases, I think.
Five commercial cases in 10 years.
That's how many you had.
That's right.
Let me just follow up with this.
For those two companies in these states.
Okay, good. That's how many court cases, correct?
That's how many where a lawsuit was filed against somebody.
And then went to court, but not...
No, none of those have gone to court.
All right.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions,
thank you
for your testimony. I think we've got a pretty good smattering of a couple different points of view, and I think I'm ready to take a motion on this amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the B11 amendments.
We'll wait till we get our other member back.
Oh, okay.
Moment. Representative Girard has moved the B11 amendment to House Bill 2112. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I may, just a couple words. We're not outlawing drive-it with this and your products in that display over there. So I don't think it's anything against this man's, Mr. Hobbs' company. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Thank you for that, Representative Schaffler. I think we've beat this one up enough, and I think we're going to, at least in the state of Oregon, we're going to have a drainage system, and I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that commentary, any objection to adopting the B11 amendment? Seeing none, the B11 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the House concur with the Senate amendments dated June 4th and that the bill be further amended with the B11 amendments and repassed.
Thank you. Representative Girard moves the House concur with the Senate amendments dated June 4th and that the bill be further amended with the B11 amendments and repassed. Any discussion? Maybe we'll have a roll call vote on that.
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate, House Bill 212.
Gotta sign those things.
I guess it's going back to the floor to be repassed.
Both floors.
And to the Senate floor. And to the House floor to be repassed. And with that, am I done? Oh, who would like to carry this on the Senate side?
Senator. Oh.
Senator Winters. Carrier on the House side?
I'll carry it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler carries it on the House side.
Chair Hovey, I just want to personally thank you for the work for passing this bill out, and I know that Whitney McLean, my granddaughter, thanks you, and my son and my daughter-in-law thanks you, and also the citizens, because it's kind of interesting. The Statesman Journal did an excellent story on this, and there's a lot of people who don't even know that they have a problem. And I think the Statesman pointed out that even a pinhole can create some issues with this particular part. And I think the citizens of Oregon will certainly thank all of us for what happened today.
Well, thank you. I hope this is a good step, and I hope we can get House Bill 2656 passed this session too, because I think it's the other missing piece in this issue. So with that, I'm going to close this conference committee on House Bill 212.
Oh.